I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Well, here we go again. Four Philadelphia legislators and a former traffic court judge were caught on tape accepting money and gifts they thought was from a lobbyist. He turned out to be an informant who had worked for the Attorney General's office, part of a sting that was halted by the current Attorney General, Kathleen Kane. This was detailed in a series in the Philadelphia Inquirer. The State Ethics Commission recently fined three former members of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board for taking gifts from vendors. Members of the Pennsylvania legislature have introduced bills to amend the state ethics law, which is one of the most lax in the nation when it comes to money and politics, our topic for today's Radio Times. And joining us are Barry Kaufman, Executive Director of Common Cause PA, a job he's had since 1987. And Barry, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Marty. Nice to talk to you again, John.
And let me introduce you. You jumped the gun there, Barry. Let me get John Micek in on the conversation. He's opinion editor at the Patriot News and Penn Live. And, John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times, and I'm glad that you and Barry know each other so well.
Good morning, Marty, and hey, Barry, nice to talk to you again.
John, let me begin with you, and even going back to these lawmakers, you know, caught on tape, but allegedly, what did they do wrong?
Ironically enough, I mean, they were caught on tape by this confidential informant who was working for then Attorney General Linda Kelly, accepting cash or gifts, allegedly in exchange for votes. Ironically enough, I mean, it appears that, you know, there was not criminal wrongdoing because there was no quid pro quo, and that the violation here, if there is one, is that they failed to report these gifts on their annual statements of financial interest that lawmakers are required to file with the state every May. Again, amazingly, and some lawmakers were shocked to discover this, you could actually accept, it's actually legal in Pennsylvania up until, you know, a little bit ago, or still is rather, to accept cash gifts from somebody. That's an envelope full of cash or gift cards or debit cards or traveler's checks, as long as there's no expectation of a quid pro quo. To any sane person, and I'm sure Barry would concur in this, that looks a heck of a lot like a bribe. Yet, it was apparently legal under the circumstances for these lawmakers to accept this stuff. So there's our current predicament.
Well, let me go back to you, Barry Kaufman. And I know from your organization, you actually want to ban all gifts in Pennsylvania. But help us understand, what is legal today?
Well, I think John nailed it pretty well. I mean, pretty much anything goes as long as you report. You know, you can hand somebody an envelope full of $50 bills as long as you report it. And the rules which the House recently passed and the Senate is considering would simply require no disclosure, those kind of things. But in the House, they would actually ban the provision of cash, in other words, currency to officials. In the Senate, they would ban for legislators in the Senate any kind of cash-like vehicle, no credit cards, prepaid credit cards, debit cards, currency, those kinds of things. But the thing you have to remember is that doesn't make it illegal. It just means it's a violation of the House rules. So those things would still be legal under the law. It would just be a violation of the House rules or the Senate rules. And the rules can be changed at the end of each session, or in fact, any time during the session, they can be suspended. So passing rule changes is not nearly good enough. If I may, I'd just like to read a brief quote from Robert La Follette, who is one of the nation's most famed reformers at the turn of the last century. And I think he really puts things in perspective. He said back then that every legal argument which any lobbyist has to offer and which any legislator ought to hear can be presented before committees, before legislators as a legislature as a body, through the press, from the public forum, and through printed briefs and arguments placed in the hands of all members and accessible to the public. Basically, what he's saying is there's no real reason to ever provide gifts, hospitality, entertainment, and lodging to a public official. They were done for one reason, because special interest groups know that it works. They know it buys them advantage, and that advantage is often not in the public interest.
Well, and what's tricky here, John, is just the difference between advantage and influence and actual quid pro quo, which, of course, is buying votes or bribery.
Yeah, and you know, and Barry is right on here. I mean, even with the House accepting this rule, or approving this rule, rather, which could be tossed at any time, and assuming the Senate bill goes all the way, I mean, this is the lowest of the low-hanging fruit. Even if there's a ban on cash gifts, which makes complete sense, that it oughtn't to be legal at all, lobbyists can still wine and dine lawmakers as long as in unlimited amounts, as long as they report it on their lobbyist disclosure forms. They can still wing them off to Texas, as Reins Resources did a couple of years ago for a Super Bowl party in Dallas. And all of that is perfectly legal. And, yeah, there is a difference between access and quid pro quo. I mean, this is a kind of access that the average voter cannot conceive of in his or her wildest fantasies. If you're a regular voter in, say, Montgomery County or Bucks County or somewhere in your listening area, the most you can hope for is to write a letter to your representative or make a phone call and hope for an audience with that person. If you are, you know, buying, if you are a lobbyist who is buying a lawmaker dinner or having drinks with them in some watering hole in Harrisburg, you have their ear. And that is the most valuable commodity in all of our political system right now.
Well, in fact, John, you had a piece back in the fall about Restaurant Row in Harrisburg and the kind of wining and dining that goes on there on a pretty regular basis. It looks like it's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday operation.
It actually staggers the imagination. There is a regular schedule of fundraisers that literally begin with breakfast in the morning, where you can have Danish and coffee with a lawmaker. You could then see your bill voted upon or discussed in committee, then go to lunch with a lawmaker at a fundraiser, see that bill conceivably voted upon in the afternoon, and then go to an evening reception where you can chuckle over drinks over the fantastic day you've just had. I actually counted on one Tuesday afternoon, if you were somehow able to clone yourself and travel through time and be at all of these events simultaneously, and had given it the maximum at all of these events, a single lobbyist would have donated $17,000 out of his or her pocket in this scheduled event. And it happens almost every day during the legislative week, which is Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And again, it's not always, and lobbyists acknowledge this, it's not with the expectation that there is a vote, but what the expectation is that they are going to have access and be able to talk and build relationships. And this is a kind of relationship building that the average voter can only imagine.
And it even goes further than that.
Sure, go ahead, Barry.
Because they actually configure the legislative session day to ensure that they get out of session in time to go to these events. So they will break to make sure that the lawmakers have time to go to these kinds of activities. So that's actually built in the legislative schedule. And, you know, that has direct impacts on public policy. That has direct impacts on the lives of everybody listening to your show.
Well, Barry, let me go back to you. And it, you know, because of self-interest, and human beings operate largely in their own self-interest, why would lawmakers in Harrisburg vote to tighten some of these rules, knowing how much money is needed to run for office, to stay in office, to be an elected official these days?
Yeah, I mean, you raise a good point. About half the states have put in place either gift bans or strict restrictions on gift giving. But in many of those states, they came about through a process called initiative and referendum, where the voters have tools in those states to say, finally, enough is enough. They can put laws on the ballot and vote on them. So in many cases where those laws exist, they came through the voter initiative process. As Lincoln Steffens once said, unfortunately, about Philadelphia, but it probably applies to all of Pennsylvania, he said Philadelphians were corrupt but content. Unfortunately, that seems to apply to many Pennsylvanians. We have to get past this culture of corruption. We cannot continue this litany of seemingly monthly some major scandal happening where public officials, either at the Turnpike Commission or the legislature or the Liquor Control Board, are found doing something which is highly inappropriate and does have direct impacts on public policy.
But if there aren't these legislative tools, John, it requires, it seems to me, some kind of public outrage. And sometimes it's hard to gauge whether people are outraged about this or not. There's so much to be outraged about anyway.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my complaint is not so much, and I should probably be clear about this, my complaint is not so much with lobbyists as individuals. These are men and women who are hired to do a job, and many of them are hardworking professionals, but rather the culture that surrounds this. And yeah, I mean, I've likened it to sort of addicts coming off a 3-day bender. You know, we have this explosion of corruption, and there's a fervor to get sober and to find reform, and that kind of putters along for a little while, and then people kind of forget about it and fall back into old ways. And you know, then there's some other explosion of corruption, and then, you know, we find ourselves back in this cycle. And you know, I think Barry is correct. I mean, what it's going to take is a wholesale change to the culture itself, through campaign finance reform, through a constitutional convention, through sort of core and fundamental changes to the existing political system. And that, you know, that will require sustained public pressure, sustained public outrage, and it's kind of hard to focus the public's attention on this kind of stuff for any sustained amount of time, just because there's so many other things competing for their attention. And then in some quarters of the state, that Harrisburg might as well be Venus, because it's so awfully far away.
I mean, what John raises an important point, if only indirectly, and ironically, the lobbyists may not be the bad guys here. I am also a registered lobbyist, in interest of full disclosure. But, you know, many of my colleagues come to me all the time saying, why can't we get a gift ban? They would love to have a gift ban. They wouldn't have to keep going back for their clients asking for money to provide gifts, hospitality, entertainment, and lodging. Hey, they might actually get to go home at reasonable times and spend time with their family. And legislators could then spend time while they're in Harrisburg, you know, doing their research and preparing for the next day's business on public policy. So, you know, interestingly enough, it's the lobbyists may not be the bad guys here.
Well, Barry, a couple of senators have introduced a bill to ban cash gifts. Lisa Baker, Lloyd Schmuckler. Do you think that's going to go anywhere?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I think we have one of those moments, like we had after the pay raise scandals. We really can't let this opportunity slip through our fingers again. We can't let our lawmakers squander this moment where we can actually, you know, improve the level of government and maybe even restore some public confidence in the integrity of government. So I think there is a golden opportunity, which will last probably at least for the rest of this session. There's a lot of us working hard on that. There will be a hearing, actually, in the Senate on Monday morning. So encourage folks that are going to be in Harrisburg to come to the hearing. Mm. I think there is momentum now, and as John knows, now momentum is the sort of the name of the game in a lot of issues.
Well, we're almost having a break here, John, but is there concern that whatever this reform could just end up getting stuck in a committee and not go anywhere?
Well, I mean, the bill has come out of the Senate. We should be clear on that. So it's over in the House now. So sustained public pressure with calls to lawmakers is what it's going to take. And at Penn Live, in fact, if I could put in a very quick plug, we have called for a complete ban on gifts to lawmakers and to state officials, and have launched a petition drive to that effect. So if people want to come over to PennLive.com to our opinion section and sign our petition, I would certainly encourage them to do that. That is one way to keep holding the legislature's feet to the fire.
And I encourage people to give us a call, join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Are you as outraged as our guests? Barry Kaufman, Executive Director of Common Cause PA. John Micek, Opinion Editor for the Patriot News and Penn Live. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, AT&T's annual political comedy, This Is the Week That Is. Written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and This Is the Week That Is ensemble, this annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on the day's most important news, from Russian invasions to dog curbing in South Philadelphia. Tickets at 1812productions.org.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA's 113th Annual Student Exhibition kicks off with a preview party on May 8th, hosted by PAFA's Women's Board, featuring over 1,000 works of art by PAFA's BFA, Certificate, and MFA students. The ASE is an opportunity to meet the artists and purchase work by the rising stars of the art world. PAFA's 113th Annual Student Exhibition is on view May 9th through June 1st. More details at pafa.edu/ASE.
Supporting WHYY Camp Hill Special School with day and residential options is a community committed to the care and education of children ages 4 through 21 with mild to severe intellectual disabilities. Camp Hill's curriculum includes music, art, drama, the sciences, life and social skills development, animal husbandry, and horticulture. Camp Hill Special School is hosting an open house at their Chester County campus on Wednesday, May 14th at 9 a.m. Details at camphillspecialschool.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Barry Kaufman, head of Common Cause PA, and John Misek from the Patriot News about whether the legislature is ready to tighten laws about cash and non-cash gifts. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. John, let me go back to you. And are there questions about whether the Ethics Board has enough teeth to even enforce the laws that are on the books today?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a, with all due respect to our friends at the Ethics Commission, the Pennsylvania Ethics Statute is kind of a joke. You know, if you, as we saw with the Liquor Control Board, it's you get fined for the amount of which you are sort of liable for. So if you did $10,000 worth of violation, you get fined for $10,000. It's sort of the equivalent of saying stop, or I'll say stop again more forcefully. There are no real teeth to the ethics law. I mean, they're a good bunch of folk over there. I don't mean any sort of denigration to them, but the law itself is kind of laughable.
And Barry, just to recap, three former officials from the Liquor Control Board apparently violated the Ethics Act. They took gifts from vendors and did not report those gifts, and now are paying those fines. What are your thoughts about the Ethics Board?
Right. No, I think John made a great point. You know, the law itself needs fixed. I think the Ethics Commission enforces the law to the best of its ability. The quality of the board at any given time depends on its political appointees. The people who make the final decisions are all political appointees, and you know the staff has no control over the decisions they make. So the quality of the decisions they make kind of ebbs and flows with the level of people on the board. But you know, there's a lot of improvements which could be made in the law itself. Right now, the maximum a person could be fined for using the powers of his or her office to enrich themselves, their family, is up to three times the advantage they took out of that situation. So there is a treble damages provision, but that's really fully enforced. But there's lots of other things in the law. Right now, the ethics law only applies to financial conflicts of interest. And even those provisions are weakened. If you want to go into that in the show, I can go and discuss some of the things which could be improved.
Yeah, well, the ball is in your court, Barry. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, right now, for instance, lawmakers are permitted to sit on corporate boards, which may be doing business with the state or seeking to get contracts with the state. Well, we should be banning that. Why should they be allowed to sit on a board which is paying them with hopes of influencing the outcome of those decisions? Why not require when they have to disclose, when public officials have to disclose outside income, to disclose the amounts of outside income from each source, so voters and taxpayers can distinguish between what is really maybe an influential sort of outside income as opposed to something which is minimal. Why not when people disclose that they have outside jobs? Disclose how much they're earning from those outside jobs and what they actually did to earn that money. In other words, if a lawmaker, let's say, is a real estate consultant working for a real estate firm in Philadelphia, doing real estate consulting in South Jersey, what expertise did he actually have to do that consulting, and what did he actually accomplish through that, or was this just a new work job? Those are the kind of things we should do. I mean, we should also ban people from making contractors from making campaign contributions to people they're seeking contracts from, or they may already have contracts from the state. So there's a whole wide range of things we could do to beef up the ethics law.
And John, is this what other states do? I mean, some of what Barry Kaufman was just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, we're not exactly talking blue sky stuff here. I mean, some of this stuff is very easy, and some of it's very doable. Other states, Montana, for instance, requires lawmakers to empty their campaign coffers before the start of a legislative session. Mm-hmm. It also bans, they also banned fundraising during the course of a legislative session. That way, a clear demarcation between political season and policy season. Yeah, if you look at the National Conference of State Legislatures websites, and I look specifically at the gift ban provisions, other states have much more rigorous language than does Pennsylvania. So the stuff that Barry is talking about here is not unreachable. In fact, it's sort of standard operating procedure in many other states. But when you bring up these topics to lawmakers here, they sort of gnash their teeth and rend their garments and say, well, we couldn't possibly ever do that here because the whole system would grind to a halt, which is nonsense because other states have done it and the wheels of democracy have not come rolling off.
Right. Well, Barry, you've been at this since 1987. I mean, it's really hard to change a culture.
It is. I mean, you know, Pennsylvania has this long reputation, you know, going back to the Civil War before where, you know, I guess Abraham Lincoln sent Simon Cameron off to Russia because he said Cameron would steal a hot stove if he thought he could get away with it. So, I mean, this culture goes back. You know, we had some of the biggest robber barons in Pennsylvania with Boies Penrose and Matthew Quay and others, some of who went to jail back in those days, the corruption that went on with the building of the state capitol. But no, Pennsylvanians shouldn't tolerate this. It doesn't have to be this way. It is not this way in other states. We can change the system. And, you know, right now, the citizens listening to your show have an opportunity to do that. There's going to be a primary election in less than a month. There's probably beginning town hall meetings. There's going to be call-in shows like this one with candidates on. And, you know, you should ask the question, as a condition of your reelection, will you enact a gift ban and do it before November?
We have a comment from Carol from Mount Airy. What about restricting big money coming from groups outside of the state? John Micek, do you want to take that? Is that a big problem?
It is. It has become more of one in the wake of Citizens United. You see this particularly in political contests. You know, the Republican Governors Association, I'm sure, will be coming in to spend money on Governor Corbett. Their Democratic equivalent will probably do the same thing in that race. You see it in congressional races. And then you see it in big issue pushes as well, say, surrounding liquor privatization, or particularly liquor privatization, where the Distillers Council of the United States now is part of a online web campaign to further this one privatization scheme. So it can be an issue, again, particularly in political contests, and it can be restricted. But the problem you get into there is with sort of these U.S. Supreme Court decisions on money as speech. So it's a little bit more problematic than it was. And McCutcheon has further complicated things, too.
Well, let me toss that back to you, Barry, because we're talking about the possibility of restricting things in Pennsylvania. But meanwhile, you've got the Supreme Court making decisions that essentially opens the spigot for campaign money.
Yeah, I know. I think the court at best was naive in these decisions. The court did say that you can continue to limit campaign contributions directly from corporations, which have in many cases almost limitless amounts of money to invest. And remember, it's not their money. It's the shareholders' money in the first place. But, you know, they can sort of open the floodgates of corporate money into campaigns. And, you know, that does create some very significant problems. I think it's going to take maybe a constitutional amendment at the federal level to say, you know, money is not speech and corporations are not people. So I think, you know, the people, again, are going to have to get up in arms and say, this is not the kind of democracy we want.
Well, we are exploring current efforts in Philadelphia, or I should say in Pennsylvania, for ethics reform, what it would take to change the culture that enables political influence, cash donations, gift donations to members of the legislature. And again, our guests are Barry Kaufman. He's executive director of Common Cause PA. Also with us, John Micek, opinion editor for the Patriot News and Penn Live. And we want to hear from you. We want to find out whether you think money can be taken out of politics and whether that would create a more level playing field for all of us. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, with your comments. And you can also send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. John, let me ask you about Senator Leanna Washington. She's was indicted recently, allegedly using legislative staff to perform political activities. Of course, these are just allegations and an indictment so far. But nonetheless, it reminds me of Senator Fumo and some of the other people, former members of the legislature, that got in big trouble.
Yeah, you know, I wrote a column about this, and like the first word was just seriously, because we're now, how many of these scandals are we into where we've seen this exact same thing that Senator Washington has been accused of? It's the fourth iteration or whatever. And yeah, she was accused of using her taxpayer funded staff to help organize birthday parties with fountains and all sorts of frippery, and they were doing this on taxpayer funded time. It just sort of beggars the imagination that after, you know, how many series of arrests and indictments and convictions and the senator seeing her colleagues marched off to prison in shackles, that she would think, well, you know what, I'm not going to get caught, and yet allegedly go ahead and do this anyway. You wonder what it takes for the message to get across. It's a little gobsmacking, frankly.
Well, Barry, I mean, are the lines between legislating and campaigning, are they that opaque?
No, they are so totally blurred these days. You know, the relation, as we've sort of been talking through this, I hope people are beginning to understand that, you know, the relationships between campaign contributions and gifts giving and public policy outcomes are all so intermeshed that it's almost impossible to distinguish them. And that's what we're trying to do here. You know, even if we got a gift ban, that wouldn't necessarily prohibit a public official from going out and having dinner or having a vacation with anybody. What it would do, however, is saying you're not going to get a special advantage through that, because if you want to do that, it's either, number one, official business, and therefore directly related to their duties and should be paid for with public funds out of their allocated expense accounts. Or number two, it's personal business. And every once in a while, you do have to actually open up your own wallet and pay for things.
But only because we're in primary campaign season, if someone, right, if an individual just wants to give to a candidate running for office in Pennsylvania, Barry, they can do that, yes?
Oh, absolutely. In Pennsylvania, you can give unlimited amounts of money. Pennsylvania is now one of, I think, 11 states which has no limits on campaign contributions. So in some states where, you know, you're maybe limited to giving $200 or maybe $1,000 to a campaign, we are now seeing million-dollar donations to candidates. We kind of broke the record 4 years ago with $500,000 contributions from one individual source to one individual candidate. That's just absolutely mind-blowing, and that just opens the doors to corruption, and we have to stop that.
But, I mean, how would then someone run for office? I mean, are you saying that they shouldn't get any money from anybody at any time?
Oh, no. Well, no, number one, it takes money to run a campaign.
Exactly.
And you have to set limits at a level which allows people to raise money for campaigns. But, you know, I think fundraising is actually maybe that first good test of how well a person can manage a government. If you, you know, governments have limited resources, campaigns are going to have limited resources. If we see how well candidates can manage their campaigns, it might give us a little bit of an idea of how well they can manage a government. So if we do put restrictions on, like I said, you know, all but 11 other states have on campaign contributions, we can begin to, number one, regain control of spending, and number two, we can begin to diminish the impact that any particular outside source may have on that candidate, and may begin to limit that candidate being beholden to any source of major contributions.
John, you want to weigh in on that, and then we'll get to our callers.
Yeah, I mean, the sanest place to start, and you see bills to this effect quite often, is to have the Pennsylvania system mimic the federal system, where there's a $2,500 aggregate limit that any one person can give to an individual candidate. I mean, that still opens the door to bundling and that kind of stuff, but I mean, that at least would put some kind of ceiling on how much an individual can give to one candidate. It's we're not really talking about difficult stuff here. Yet, again, when you try to broach this issue with lawmakers, they look at you as if you're speaking ancient Hittite. I mean, there are campaign limits in place in other states. There are reasonably sane limits in place on the federal level. It's not that difficult to do. Again, what it takes is a change in culture. What it takes is consistent public pressure. But I mean, these things, you know, these things can be achievable if there's serious thought given to them.
Well, if you do the research, I mean, if you look through the process, the current system is definitely geared toward protecting incumbents.
Yep.
If you look at where people, especially senior lawmakers, get a lot of their sources, if they're chairman of a committee, it's often from sources which have bills which regularly come before that committee and need to be in good stead with that official. So, you know, if we do what other states do, we can begin to tone down the influence and restore the ownership of our government back to the taxpayers and the voters.
Well, we have an explosion of phone calls. Let me get Andrew from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us. Andrew, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
Listen, I just wanted to say, and Marty, you remember this, I want to take issue with the speakers talking about the currency protecting incumbents. I agree it does, but I think their solution does, too. We all remember Sam Capps' first race against John Street many years ago. There were no limits in Philadelphia at the time, and he got a six-figure donation from somebody outside the city that gave him credibility to run as a Republican. And Republicans are a party that are almost insignificant in the city. With the current law today, Republicans are even less significant because you can't get in there and get a big donation to get credibility to run against the incumbent party. And I'd like them to address, what do you do in a situation like Philadelphia where you need something like this in order to challenge it, or we're stuck with a one-party city?
Well, that you're raising a whole host of issues, and I have to say that we have Shane Creamer waiting in the wings, executive director of the Philadelphia Board of Ethics, talking about what Philadelphia is actually doing on this issue. But, John, you want to weigh in on that at all?
Okay, if I can understand the caller correctly, I mean, how you sort of level the playing field. I mean, I think a level playing field for everybody makes for a level playing field for everybody. That is really, I mean, yeah, that is only really the one way to, I think the one way to come at it. Apart from that, I'm not familiar enough to sort of wade into the specifics of Philadelphia city politics, but I think, you know, if there are sane limits for all concerned, then that, you know, that should make it a little bit easier for people to crack control. I mean, there are other issues at the state level about redistricting, that kind of stuff that empower incumbents, but that's sort of the one crack, and maybe Barry has some insight, but I do not.
Well, you know,
basically, yeah. Andrew rolled in a second concern, which is you can't really separate, and that's, you know, incumbency protection through gerrymandering. When you combine gerrymandering and campaign contributions, you have a really lethal impact on Pennsylvania's political system.
Exactly right.
We're almost out of time here. I'm going to get Michael on. I might regret it only because we're almost out of time. Michael, just toss out your question really fast. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hope this isn't too naive. If you take away the gifts in terms of cash or show tickets or dinners for these lobbyists, how else would they exert their influence?
Great. I mean, that's a great question.
Curious.
Yeah, fair enough. Barry, that's in your court. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that goes right back to my opening comment from Robert LaFollette. Lobbyists, just like everybody else, would have to prepare their briefs, do their letters, do office visits, all the other nonsense with regard to hospitality, entertainment, and lodging. That's just to buy special advantage. We can make lobbyists do the same things every other citizen does, permit them to submit written materials and do office visits.
Final word to you, John Micek, about 20 seconds.
Again, I'll put in a quick plug. We have a gift ban petition on penlive.com, so please come and sign it. If you want the culture to change, you have to make your voice heard. So that would be my exhortation to the audience today.
Well, John Micek and Barry Kaufman, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome, John. And John Micek, opinion editor for the Patriot News and Penn Live. Barry Kaufman, executive director of Common Cause PA. And yes, Shane Creamer waiting in the wings, executive director of the Philadelphia Board of Ethics. And Philadelphia has been doing some stuff about what we've been talking about. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. For over 100 years, Wistar scientists have helped keep your families, friends, and employees healthy because of our research that guides the creation of early-stage drugs. We then work with the pharmaceutical industry for their final production. Our name may not be on these cancer drugs, but our fingerprints are all over them. To learn more about how Wistar keeps you healthy and our region economically strong, online at wistar.org.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the Museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. His was a genius that would reveal itself early, develop swiftly, and vanish all too soon. Yannick Nézet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra present a four-concert Mozart celebration, the final three symphonies, and the three piano concertos of 1785. Mozart tickets online or at 215-893-1999. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, a Mozart celebration with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscowane. We were just talking about whether Harrisburg would reform its ethics rules about lawmakers accepting cash and gifts. Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter just signed a bill that bans city officers and employees from accepting gifts of cash as well as non-cash gifts worth more than $99 in a calendar year. We asked Shane Creamer to join us. He is executive director of the Philadelphia Board of Ethics. And Shane, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
We were talking a lot with our previous guests about what it takes to change a culture in order to change how cash gifts are given or not given. What did it take to change the culture in Philadelphia?
Well, it's fundamentally taken a lot of political will, as evidenced by the fact that this new gift rule that we have in the city was co-sponsored by all 17 members of council. It was fast-tracked by council and then quickly signed by the mayor. Second, there was really an explosion of public interest in the city's gift law, which began last April when the board began an effort to clarify the old gift law by regulation. So I think that's really what's behind the changes in Philadelphia.
And how these changes, how is that going to then change how business is done in this city?
Well, I think that over the last 7 years since the Board of Ethics came online, we have been able to establish a robust ethics program where people accept that there are rules that limit their conduct and behavior and that they're subject to, and there's a larger effort to comply with them.
And what we're talking about here is that if you're a city employee or you work for the government, you cannot accept a cash gift. Is that correct?
That is correct.
From anybody?
No, okay. Only from what we call restricted sources. So there are two components to the gift rule. There are limitations, which you mentioned some of them. You can't take more than $99 in the aggregate per year from any person. You can't accept cash gifts or solicit gifts, but from certain sources. So the sources you're limited from are those seeking official action that the officer or employee has the ability to effect, or from people who have a financial interest at the time of the gift, which the officer or employee is able to substantially affect through official action. So we call those types of sources restricted sources. So the limits apply only to gifts from restricted sources.
The limits apply only to gifts from restricted sources. So if I'm, let's say I'm a friend of someone that works in city council, can I give them some money?
If you're not seeking official action,
okay,
and if you don't have financial interest that could be affected by that person, you could. Like if you're a family member, you could. There is no friend exception, though, under our law.
Okay. But family, yes.
Yes.
Friend, no. And why the $99? I mean, why not just ban all gifts of all kinds?
Yeah, the problem with zero gift bans. But by the way, there is really no such thing as a zero gift ban in the country. There are gift rules with $0 limits, but they all have expansive exceptions. The problem with the $0 rules is that they tend to be overbroad. You know, the gift rules are supposed to prevent officials from being influenced unfairly by a gift. And if you have a de minimis gift or something of very low value, you really have to question whether it has the potential to influence decisions unfairly.
So if I, let's say I'm a friend of someone in city council, I don't have this job because I wouldn't be doing this in my job here at WHYY, but if I took them out for dinner or something like that and picked up the tab, does that raise ethical questions?
It could potentially, and that's why you set a limit of $99, or it could be 50. Other jurisdictions have 50. Others set it at 200. But all these numbers are, I think, in a reasonable range set for things of value that could unfairly influence decision-making. And below that, you want to permit a certain level of what I'll call innocuous gift-giving, those kinds of gifts that are not going to influence decision-making unfairly.
Does that then require that everyone working for city government has to disclose any kind of transaction and then your office sign off on it?
No, it doesn't. Only gifts over $200 have to be disclosed on the city financial disclosure forms. And there is no disclosure requirement for gifts below $99.
But do you see money and gifts as having some degree of influence, that it gives whoever the giver is, it gives them a bit of a leg up when it comes to political decisions or legislation?
I think at a certain point, a gift can have that potential. But I think you have to distinguish between a $5 coffee drink and a $500 watch or a gift or a trip to the Super Bowl. You have to limit gifts that have the potential to influence decision-making unfairly. And that's really what the better gift rules focus on.
We were talking with Barry Kaufman of Common Cause Pennsylvania earlier, and from his perspective, he says, at least as it applies to lobbyists, you know, just get the money out so that everyone who is a lobbyist can just make their case to an elected representative, and then they can decide on the merits of the case, and there is no financial transaction. Is that something that makes sense to you, that you support? You like that idea?
I think it's a good idea to try to limit the amount of money that is in politics, but I don't think you can prevent it entirely. I don't think it's practical.
Because it's just, you can't enforce it, or it's just going to happen.
It's not practical. People won't respect laws like that if they're enforced to the letter of the law. People won't comply with the law. You want rules that people can agree are fairly drawn to prohibit the conduct that you want to prohibit and not overstep that.
My reading in preparation for talking to you was that you originally wanted a $200 limit as opposed to the $99, or like sort of cuts your limit in half. Are you comfortable with the $99?
Yes, I am. Just to point out the difference, what we were doing, we were interpreting the city's old gift law, which was an abstract rule, did not have a bright line like the new rule does. And so we were trying to translate that abstract standard, substantial economic value, into concrete terms. And in previous interpretations from past solicitor opinions and also from previous board decisions, that was always an amount over $200.
Mm. And that's Shane Creamer, our third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. He's executive director of the Philadelphia Board of Ethics. And just a couple of weeks ago, and I have to say this happened rather quietly, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter signed a bill. It banned city officers and employees from accepting gifts of cash as well as non-cash gifts worth more than $99 in a calendar year. Very different from what's going on or not going on in Harrisburg. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'd be curious about your response. So Lincoln Steffens, his description of Philadelphia as corrupt and contented, that we can get rid of that old adage?
Absolutely. I don't think that applies anymore. I don't think it's applied for a long time in Philadelphia.
And why do you think, I mean, Philadelphia seems to be a bit of ahead of the curve when it comes to Harrisburg. I know you don't want to get too involved or immersed in what's going on in Harrisburg, but it's interesting that, that Philadelphia seems to have tackled this issue where Harrisburg is still wrestling with it.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think the State Ethics Act, which created the State Ethics Commission, was passed back in 1978. So it's sort of a post-Watergate reform measure, which a lot of states enacted at that time. And it hasn't been substantially changed since. And Philadelphia's ethics code was originally adopted in 1963 in response to a scandal that was called Paola. I'm not familiar with the details of it. That law wasn't really enforced or changed in any significant way until 2005, when the city passed legislation that led to the establishment of this new agency that was independent of the administration, had enforcement power, and the authority to interpret the rules that it oversaw. And since this agency has come online, council has acted repeatedly to improve and sharpen the laws and even expand the jurisdiction of the board by adding laws like the lobbying code.
And this was obviously the pay-to-play scandal of that time. I mean, do you think scandals then play an important, even inspiring role when it comes to tightening up campaign laws?
I think historically that's an accurate statement, but it's interesting to note that this new gift law in Philadelphia wasn't enacted in response to any corruption scandal, unlike the old gift gift rule and many other ethics reform measures in both Philadelphia and across the country.
Did you find, though, interest in leadership coming from leadership in Philadelphia, from Mayor Nutter and other members of city council as well?
Yeah, well, I think clearly Mayor Nutter has a well-established track record on ethics reform as a city council member. He introduced the legislation which led to the creation of this board. He has a chief integrity officer and a very strong inspector general. He's run a very clean administration, I think, within council. There's been broad support for ethics reform, as evidenced by the most recent legislation, this gift bill, which I mentioned had every member of council co-sponsor. We've had leadership from Council President Clark on this bill and other members of City Council. Other legislation, like the campaign finance law, was introduced by Councilman Good. So there are a lot of people in council and the mayor who have made ethics reform a priority in Philadelphia, and I think that's what's made the difference.
There wasn't a lot of hoopla when Mayor Nutter signed this bill. Was that on purpose, do you think?
I don't know. I'm not really familiar with the protocols or ceremonies surrounding signing of legislation, but so I really can't comment on that.
We have an email from Robert. He says, we cannot change a culture and have more honest and open government with public officials acting only in their self-interest. Do you agree with Robert?
We can't have
unless, you know, public officials can think beyond their own self-interest.
I think that's right, and I think public integrity rules like the ones that we oversee are designed to separate personal financial interest from the public interest.
Explain what you mean.
So the ethics code is filled with conflict of interest rules and rules that are designed to prevent officials from taking action that affect their own personal financial interest or those of their close friends and relatives and businesses that they are associated with. And we have a pay-to-play contracting law, which limits the ability to award contracts to large campaign donors.
And how important are things like transparency and disclosure and just making sure that whatever an elected official does or a city official does is that it is out there for the public to see?
Yeah, that's a critical component of any good ethics program, and we oversee several disclosures. There's campaign finance disclosure, which is available electronically. We have financial disclosure, which is about to be filed for the last calendar year. We have lobbying disclosure. So that is an essential part of any good ethics program, and in Philadelphia we have a pretty good setup right now.
And is that timely disclosure? Sometimes disclosure comes months and months after money is given or gotten.
Yeah, so the lobbying expense reports are filed on a quarterly basis, which is standard in lobbying laws across the country, including Pennsylvania's lobbying law. The financial disclosures are filed on an annual basis on May 1st. So there is a bit of a lag there, but you have to wait at least until the end of the year for that. And then campaign finance disclosures are made throughout the year on the state schedule. So that there can be a delay in campaign finance disclosure, but that's by operation of state law.
And how do you think Philadelphia compares to other big cities or even states when it comes to gift laws?
I think we have a very strong gift law. I think that we are similar to some cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco, both with $100 limits. But I think I should point out there's no Goldilocks gift rule that strikes a perfect balance. In other words, there's no single rule or limit that everyone will agree is right. But what you want to do is design a gift rule that prevents officials from receiving gifts that could unfairly influence decision-making.
And I'm assuming that your office will then be watching to see how this gift law is implemented, how it works, if it needs tweaking, if it needs rethinking?
That's right. So we're charged with administering, interpreting, and enforcing this new gift law. We can further clarify the law. It's actually very detailed because it drew heavily on the board's proposed regulation that we developed last year. So it's already very detailed, but we can further clarify the law through the regulatory process, and then we can also issue advisory opinions. We will be training city officials on this new gift rule. We've already started that. And of course, if there are violations, we receive complaints, we will follow up on those.
And we're almost out of time here. The no Goldilocks gift rule, meaning not too hot, not too cold?
That's right. Just right.
Just right. Shane Creamer, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And he's Executive Director of the Philadelphia Board of Ethics. And we began our conversation with Barry Kaufman, Executive Director of Common Cause PA, and also with John Misek, Opinion Editor of the Patriot News and Penn Live, talking about money and gifts and cash and politics. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. And you can find out more about this program, including a Twitter and Facebook, podcasts, email archives, and satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.